Dorothy, thank you so much for being with me. Dorothy Dalton is a global talent management strategist, certified coach, and trainer. Her expertise lies in working with leading international companies and organizations, where she helps identify, attract, and coach top talent into high-performing leadership roles. She's a keynote speaker and the CEO of 3PLUS International. I should add that Dorothy has a special interest in workplace aggression and toxic work environments. And it's important to note here that she is a trauma-informed coach. We'll talk about what that is, but that's crucially important for those of us who are bully targets and bully victims and those folks who are trying to help us through those circumstances. Dorothy, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis. Okay. So again, thank you, Dorothy. It's great to be with you from Brussels. And one of the most exciting things for me in working on this summit has been talking to people all over the world. You live in Brussels, so that's where we're talking with you today. Okay. So let me start with this and we'll go from there. Given that all that you do in helping people with their careers, how did you come to be interested and involved in workplace incivility specifically?
Well, I think that my early career was in the steel industry, and I was one of three out of 150 graduate trainees, three women out of 150, so 147 men. And my introduction to the workplace was one of hostility, sexism, sexual harassment. And in fact, my very first project way back in the 80s was doing a project on that. So it's always been with me. And then when I became a coach, I became very aware that these behaviors, these patterns were still very much in evidence in the workplace. They didn't go away with time.
And can you be a little bit more specific? Of course, here in the States, and where were you working at that time back in the 80s? Where was that?
In the UK.
In the UK. Okay. So I know there's different kind of rules, regulations, laws as it pertains to different forms of workplace aggression. Obviously, sexual harassment continues to this day. There are laws here in the States against it, but it doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't happen or that you have a remedy for it. How did the aggression and the incivility affect you, and what form did it take?
Well, I would say, and this is a general observation, I think bullying and harassment has changed.
Okay.
And I think as our legal system, as our corporate protocols address the more blatant issues, bullying and harassment has become more sophisticated. So when I was a young woman training, working, it was not uncommon to, I don't know, to have a man put his hand on your bum.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I can say that in this podcast.
You can.
On my bum. in the good old photocopy room. And yeah. Really hit on, harassed. Email didn't exist then, so it was much more direct. Now, today, as our societies, our cultures, corporate business has become sophisticated, and bullies are aware of getting caught, and they're much more sophisticated. So they tend to, I mean, it clearly happens that I think over 90% of women have been sexually harassed in the workplace.
Yeah.
But it tends to be more subtle than it used to be.
Yeah.
And what we call microaggressions.
And we'll talk about that, micro and macro aggressions. And in many cases, in my career, 25 years in television in New York City, I don't want to compare our circumstances. And sexual harassment, even though it was tolerated, I'm not sure that's even the word, but obviously we've come a long way and we have a long way to go. My wife works in domestic violence, which is all the way to the end of the extreme. But I was in television, and in my case, the aggression, I thought, well, that's television in New York. I asked for it. The incivility, it's high pressure, live television. Similar to, well, that's how men are going to be to you in the 80s. It wasn't, and now we realize, no, it doesn't matter what industry you're in. And I've been learning that workplace aggression and bullying is rampant in healthcare, education. I keep hearing from people that work in nonprofit, where you'd think people might be a little kinder to one another. And so it's happening everywhere. And to your point, which I haven't really heard it mentioned in the way you're mentioning it, that it's more subtle, whether they do it behind closed doors or there's no record of it. But I was really interested in a story that you and I talked about in a previous conversation, because most of my experiences with men bullies, male bullies, but I've come across female bullies as well. And so I'm interested in your story about a client that you worked with who is being bullied by another woman. Can you tell us about that story? And there's a particular interest that I have in the ending of the story.
Yeah, I think it was someone who basically came to see me looking to change jobs. And when we dug into the reason of why they wanted to move, it was because that she worked in a toxic workplace. And one of the things that I always try to do is to establish the facts, you know, what's going on? Tell me the story, because sometimes it's not always bullying. And this is a gender issue. Sometimes female authority is resisted very heavily by both men and women. So behavior that is acceptable from men is rejected because the behavior is coming from a woman. So we went through that process and I decided that, and we agreed that she was still, there was a form of bullying. She was excluded from certain meetings. She was the only person and I'm doing this from memory now, the only person who was not invited to a social function at the boss's house. She was excluded off circulation and this. So there were all of these small attempts to undermine her.
Yeah, that's the worst feeling when you're not invited, not included, and I've had this in my own career, being ostracized. There's nothing, I'd rather be yelled at than to be ignored. So please continue.
So, I think that's what I mean about more subtle things, because one time it would be, you know, the physical harassment that I had, the yelling, the slamming of doors, you know, the physical intimidation, the behaviors that we heard about with Harvey Weinstein, for example, which were, you know, really flagrant. Whereas now, and back then, it was starting to get more subtle. And she went through some protocols and they tried to resolve it. Didn't really work out. Nothing much changed. And to your point, in fact, it wasn't a movie ending. You know, they didn't end up, you know, kissing and making up and being great friends. My client actually left her job. And her legacy was that the company recognized that this woman had these behavioral tendencies. I think they might have given her coaching to try and remedy the situation. But this is quite often happened. She was a money earner.
Uh-huh.
So she generated a lot of money for the company. They didn't want to lose her. They would rather let my client go or let her move on. I think she took gardening leave and went traveling. But what they did do was they put another layer in, so that they basically put a buffer between stopping this aggressive person or this bullying person managed stuff. So they gave her like a chief of operations, whatever. And she left. She put it down to experience. And the work we did together was to be able to identify earlier and to make sure that she had strong personal boundaries about things that happened.
Yeah. And the reason I think it's a lovely story is, one, she survived the experience and went on to live her life. You know, resilience is so much a part of this work. I'm not an expert. I'm not counseling people. That's why I'm so interested to talk to you, because in my own personal experience, I don't know any kind of top 10 ways to stop your bully at work. You know, I don't know any other than coping mechanisms. And so I was curious about your coaching approach, because anybody that says, come to me and I'll solve your problem, I can help you move forward, I can help you cope. But there, as far as I know, and you're the one living this through your work, there's no real kind of guidebook that you could read to say, oh, now I know what to do to make my bully boss my best friend.
Well, I to be honest, I don't think you ever can. And so I don't even go there. It's not part of what I do.
Yeah.
I think where I focus on is protecting my client. And there are two ways of doing, well, maybe three ways. The first is establishing clear boundaries. And sometimes that's having the confidence to speak out. It's about helping them go through any complaint process, because most organizations want a formal complaint. So it really means that that person has to be very courageous.
Yeah.
And quite often, a target has been in the situation about six times before they finally complain. So they're really ground down. And then the final thing is then making sure they don't get into the pattern, making sure there's no repetition. But the other thing that I do, and I think this is really important if you've got corporate people listening, is to address your organizations, because quite a lot of these bullying type behaviors are top down. So they're inbred into the leadership style, into the culture, and they're accepted. And one of the reasons they're accepted is because, like the boss of my client, these people, they know it's going on. It's one of these open secrets. They know what's going on, and they might turn a blind eye because it's too much trouble, or because, you know, the person has makes a lot of money for the company or whatever. So you've got the personal level, and you've got then the corporate level of training and teaching managers and leaders to deal with this type of behavior.
Yeah. And in my circumstance in television, which I don't think is that dissimilar from any other industry, whether we hear about it again in the healthcare world, nonprofit, education, any industry across industries, was that it was either the CEO that I was reporting to or a number two person, mostly men. We talked about an experience where a woman was the bully. My experience was mostly with men, but had a couple instances where the women were bullies to other women and to me. And so it is something, it seems to me, in my experience and your experience counseling, that the culture either ignores it, accepts it, or even encourages it. Is that what you're seeing? And when people come to you, if it is something which it almost always has to be, how do you kind of approach that when the person says, well, they allow it because either the person's a rainmaker, or they're perceived as a big moneymaker, or they're just very close to the top person. And so by virtue of their proximity to power, they feel like they can get away with this.
Yeah. And it, quite interestingly, I also did a stint in television in the UK. I think a lot of in the media, I would say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is a lot of sins are forgiven for creativity.
Especially if the people are on the air. I mean, I was an executive producer. My job was to take care of the people on camera. Often they had big egos, and it was my job to soften them and let them get away with stuff. And then, you know, so that's a big part of the media.
So you have people working in these environments where, well, silence is the form of complicity. It's acceptance.
Absolutely.
So it's always about working with the individual to identify the behaviors, to create strategies for dealing with it. So it might be self-advocacy, which is, I'm really a firm believer in that. I think that comes first. You have to learn to self-advocate. It doesn't have to be conflictual. So it can be done in a way that is constructive, but firm. That's really, really important. That takes a lot of confidence. So you can deal with it yourself, or you can speak to directly on the spot, or you can speak to the person about it afterwards. So calling in is something that we do privately outside, and calling out is something you do in front of other people. So and directly to that person. And that's usually with the lower level stuff. It might be sexist or racist jokes. It might be odd comments that are hurtful or bullying. It might also be abuse of power.
Yeah.
And that's very, very common. Well, if you don't do this for me, you've got a performance review coming up, right? Or you were hoping to get that next job. So there are lots of these unspoken threats, and it's really, really important to start dealing with them. So the first step is to call it out if you're able to. So that means dealing it with the person But the most important thing is to start making notes and keeping a record.
Yeah. And it, in the experiences that I had, as I said, I was a boss myself. And so I was protecting my staff from it, which I thought was part of my job. But it was either the CEO, the number two. And I'm not a shy person. I'm not a reserved person. I was never bullied as a young person. And I don't think those are the kinds of people that are bullied in the workplace, right? Is it true that the people that you're counseling aren't just kind of timid people who, tell me about their kind of personality characteristics?
I think what's happening is that people think it's a timid person or a vulnerable person. Not always. It might be somebody who has a characteristic that makes them different to the dominant group of the company, right? So, I mean, particularly in companies that are predominantly white men, it means that people of color, women, and it might be someone with a handicap or is neurodivergent or some other difference. Someone who wears glasses, someone who has a different accent. I mean, they just pick on them. They pick on them because they can.
Yeah.
And there is something about that person that they get a rush out of doing it. It makes them feel better. And that's why I always say to people, you're not going to change that person. You know, they might be in their 20s or 30s or whatever. You are not going to unpick their life.
Yeah.
But the most important thing is to protect your own well-being.
Okay. Could you, that was, bring me to the next question I have for you, but I wanted to mention something. And I maybe should do this at the outset. I acknowledge my white privilege. And I've had a number of people say, you know, it's actually good, Andy, that you're getting involved in this. And one of the reasons that I'd like to think that I have a voice, not the voice, I'm not the expert, I'm just trying to add my voice to this work, is that, yes, I have privilege. I've had privilege my entire life. I acknowledge that. I'm now more aware of it than ever. But that didn't stop somebody from bullying me. Understanding that people of color, women have a different experience, but it didn't stop anybody. In fact, I think that in many ways, I had the characteristics of a bully target, where I was hardworking, devoted, loyal, productive, well-liked. And I'm told, obviously, I'd like to think of myself with those characteristics, but I believe it to be true. And I've been told by experts that that's the kind of person, because I just took it and I kept saying to myself, if I just work harder, work better, get better ratings for the TV shows I was doing, then the boss will love me. That was my approach. And that's not a winning, it's naive, actually.
Yeah. If you should come to me then, I would have said, no, that's not a winning approach.
I wish we would have been introduced much earlier. It would have saved me a lot of time.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that they're just doing it because they could see they could.
Yes.
And they responded. And your response, it might, because of your privilege, it might not have looked fear-based. But yep, there was probably something in that you might be concerned about losing your job, not being exposed for doing something. And, you know, what we're seeing now as tactics become more sophisticated, we're seeing something what's called gaslighting. Where you basically, you sometimes, is it me? I mean, am I imagining this? Did that really happen? Did they really, and they might say things like, well, we discussed this last week. Well, no, we didn't. Yes, we did. You've forgotten. You really got to do something about your memory or whatever. Yes. And basically, they're making you the victim twice.
Yeah, it's just awful. And I don't want to make this into kind of a therapy session, but I can't help but tell you that through the bullying that I had over years and decades, actually, and I had some wonderful experiences. And that was part of the problem. I love the work. I love the work of television journalism, creating shows, having staffs. I had staffs across the world. I loved the work. I needed the money. And I didn't want the bully to win. I guess those were my three reasons for staying. And I believe now, well, first of all, like you said, I thought, what's wrong with me? Why don't they love me? Why is that person treating me this way? And it occurs to me now that it was self-blame and then ultimately shame that I felt significant shame and trauma. I couldn't put a word on it. Now I do. I didn't then. I just thought, work harder, man up. And I know that's a gendered term, but here in the States, I was like, get tough. What's wrong with you? And I never got tough enough. And so with that in mind, Dorothy, I'd like to talk a little bit about the fact that you're a trauma-informed coach. And I think, again, I would have benefited from somebody saying, Andy, do you realize what you're going through? And so I'd like you to talk to bully targets in the audience and also bosses out there. But what does it mean to be trauma-informed? And how does that affect your counseling and coaching practice?
Well, the reason that I did it was because I was coaching, and for the benefit of the audience, that I'm really involved in career coaching and leadership and executive coaching.
Yeah.
So I'm not in the space of, I've got colleagues who work in prisons and rape centers, that sort of thing. I'm very much in a corporate environment.
Yeah.
So what I was seeing was that people were having experiences in their workplaces that were traumatic. Now, a trauma is, people think of a trauma as some catastrophe, right? You know, like a shooting or an industrial accident. What it needs, a trauma is a disturbing event or a series of disturbing events. And different people can receive that in different ways. So something that happens. And so I started to be, just to give you, for instance, I've asked one client, I just said, hey, how are you doing? And they just burst into tears.
Yeah.
Their week was just that bad.
Yeah.
And so really I qualified on the basis of not doing any harm. I really didn't want to make things worse for these people. And what I learned was that there are behaviors in our workplaces which have become normalized, which are traumatic. And most people don't know how to deal with it. And the interesting thing is, so if you're involved in a shooting or an industrial accident or some catastrophe, normally the organization will support the employee in getting the correct health treatment or mental health treatment. But if it's happening internally and it's their own culture and the behaviors that they endorse, then they're very reluctant to take ownership of that. And sometimes they have processes and protocols in place for reporting. And sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. And so you've got things like what they call systemic trauma, which is people who are subject to racism, sexism, ageism, ableism, all of these things. So if you're constantly being put down,
yeah,
for whatever reason, then eventually that is going to impact your mental health.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of thing I'm looking at.
Great. Wonderful work. And because I want to be clear with everyone that, and also because as I started and I wrote a book about my experiences, it'll be out next year. I'm not promoting it. It's not ready. But I experienced this kind of behavior for such a long time. And somebody suggested to me, well, and this was afterward, that you have PTSD. I said, wait a minute. Whoa. I never served in the Army. My life was not threatened. I don't want to suggest that I went through something that somebody in military service did. I'm not saying that. I'm not a Me Too victim. Nobody threw a stapler at my head. I've never been gushing blood. But I think what you're talking about is the thing that's so common for many of us is, and as a boss, I thought maybe I had been a bully boss because I did get irritated at times as a boss. I did pound a couple tables at tense times in television, but I always apologized. I felt terrible. I didn't do it on an ongoing basis. It happened a dozen times a year. So I don't think I was, but I certainly wasn't a perfect boss. My question to you is, is it fair to say some of us have had PTSD, even if we, our lives were never, but sometimes it almost felt like your livelihood was at stake if your life wasn't at stake. So I just want to put that out there and see what you think.
I mean, they're all part and parcel of the same thing. I think what you experienced was what's called sanctuary trauma. Uh-huh. And it's normally associated with military personnel coming back and they're let down by the system.
Yeah.
And it's extended to healthcare, schools, places where you're in a position or a place of trust and the system lets you down.
Yeah.
But today, organizations have a duty of care to their employees to protect their physical well-being, their health and safety, but also their psychological safety.
Yeah.
So when you feel abused in that way, but ongoing for many years, what they're starting to do is like rename it a little bit. So they don't call it a disorder. They call it post-traumatic stress injury.
Okay.
So basically, you've had these cumulative experiences, which are very negative. You're afraid of losing your job. You had kids to support or
yes.
Bills to pay, all of these things. And that is a real form of control.
Yeah.
So, they saw that when, this person saw when no matter how badly he treated you, you just doubled down, you worked harder, and he was laughing all the way, and he knew that you probably thought that he'd let you go if the worst came to the worst. So,
yeah,
you could, I would say, you would have post-traumatic stress injuries, which take a lot of work and a lot of time to recover from.
It's amazing that these things that happened years and decades ago, as I was recalling them years after they happened, it was like yesterday. I could remember where I was, what I was wearing, and exactly what the person said to me. That was the clearest thing to me. And I wonder if some of us, even if we're good, hardworking people, some of us, I think, are more vulnerable to this. I worked early in my career with the toughest producer I ever worked with. And he just wouldn't take that from somebody. If a boss came up to him or a supervisor and said to him something aggressive, he'd give it right back. He would not be somebody who would be bullied. And he never was. Do you think that some of us, by virtue of how we were raised, because again, I was raised that if you treat people well and all the characteristics we've talked about, do unto others, be good, be productive, it'll come back to you. So do you think some of us that have those notions are more vulnerable to this kind of management and take it and then be traumatized by it?
Well, I absolutely. I think we all bring different things to the workplace, right?
Yeah.
You might have somebody who, for example, might have been sexually abused as a child, okay?
Yeah.
Or lived in an abusive household. So when they come into the workplace, the sexism that they find there is exaggerated compared to somebody who wasn't.
Yeah.
So you have to understand that everybody's different. And it's a question of that there's no one right way. It's everyone is different and receives things differently.
I want to share an anecdote, a quick one with you. I was talking to somebody the other day who said that they had a very dysfunctional family growing up. I think she may have even used the word abusive. And when she became an adult in the workplace, either unconsciously or consciously, she said, oh, this is my second chance family. And I had an abusive family growing up. Now I have a new chance. And of course, she found aggression and bullying and was devastated by it. And I said, oh my gosh, I had the most loving family, the most adoring mother. And so I thought, oh, when I get to the workplace, and I was a great son, by the way, And so I thought, well, when I get to the workplace, I'm going to be a great employee and I'll be adored. So we came from it from exact different places with the same outcome.
But I think what happens is that, bullies, and particularly if they have certain narcissistic traits, that
yes.
they almost have like a bullying radar where they
yes.
know
yes.
they know what's going to trigger you.
Yes.
And they might see it once and then they know, and they do it again and they're confirmed and they keep on doing it until it becomes, they call it death by a thousand cuts, the microaggression.
Yes. Yes.
And so it just becomes till you're worn down.
Yeah. And I had bullies at the very beginning of my career. And after a while, I used to tell people, I think they can smell me even when I'm interviewing, and I'd look for cultures that seemed good, but somehow out of the woods would come the bully and they'd find me. And so that was just something that I had to deal with. Let me ask this, with all the work you're doing, in Europe and elsewhere, it seems like it's still an epidemic. And I'm curious, because you've been doing this work for a while with big organizations, small organizations, individuals, what's your sense of where we're going? And without getting into a political discussion, obviously worldwide, the political discourse seeps into our daily lives. So in the office, where it seems to me still to be an epidemic, what's your sense of what's going on in workplaces around Europe and around the world currently as it pertains to incivility and counseling people who are trying to figure out how to have a better workplace experience?
Well, I'm actually at a big HR conference in Paris in October, running a round table on workplace trauma, an epidemic hidden in plain sight.
Okay, yes.
And I think it's definitely out there. I mean, I can just reel off being 5,000 people fired over Zoom without camera, someone cut off from their workplace email account after 25 years to find they've been let go, sexual harassment. I mean, the list is enormous.
Okay.
And so really quite serious things that are destabilizing for people, and they are accepted.
Yeah.
So I think it is there, it's going on, it's normalized. Relating to the polarization in our wider societies, I think that has a role to play. Because I think what it's done is, for certain profiles, it's emboldened them.
Yeah.
And they realize that they can get away with saying and doing these things on social media. They see leaders behaving really badly. And instead of being role models for civility and respect, they are role models for the reverse. And you see this in terms of the crime rates from certain demographics. So I think that we've got to be really mindful. We need to do a lot more in organizations at a systemic level. It's not just about protecting individuals. As an individual, you have to protect yourself.
Yeah.
But corporations and organizations need to do more to make sure that their cultures aren't toxic.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, as a manager myself over time, for much of my career, I'd like to think that I learned from the worst and tried not to do my best to have that kind of go down, that I learned the worst and I did the opposite. And I hope that I was able to do that most of the time that I was a manager. Well, Dorothy, I think you're brilliant. I learned so much, and it's helpful to me to speak with you, and I know it's helpful to everybody watching this. So thank you so much for an engaging and informative conversation. I did want to mention, I think you have an offering for the people watching.
I have, and I'm just going to try and pull it up on my iPad.
Okay.
We created, especially in this event, I mean, for the things that you went through, I mean,
I didn't
know your story, but it's a toxic workplace checklist. And Andrea, I think, is going to put the link where you can download it for free.
Yes.
From our website. And you can just, so if you think you're going crazy with these things happening, write these things down, use that checklist. Is this happening? Is that happening? And if you were ticking high number of those boxes, it's time to do something different, either move on, make a stand, whatever you feel comfortable with. And ironically, most people leave, they do leave. I mean, it's contributory. Bullying, harassment is contributory to a high level of staff turnover.
And you can survive it. You can. I'm not saying it's for the best. I'm not saying you'll get a great job after it, but you can move on and be resilient and find a place that appreciates you.
Can I just intervene with one caveat there?
Please, sure.
You do have to change, because what you're doing, I mean, I suspect that's probably what you did. You took yourself and was this and with the same from one employer to another.
Yes.
What I would recommend, if this is happening to you once, twice, that's a pattern. See someone, get some professional support if you need to, but change the way you deal with it.
And that's what I did not do. And that's what I'm dealing with now. So yes, absolutely great point. I kept going to new jobs thinking that it'll be different here. And sadly, I didn't change. I don't blame myself. Nobody has to be bullied. But you're right. The kind of counseling that you and others can provide will help you cope in a better way than I ever did. So thank you for that. Having said that, Dorothy, if people would like to reach out and contact you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, you can contact me on my email address, which is dorothy.dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, at 3plusinternational.com. Connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. And on the website, www.3plusinternational.com, I've done a lot of, written a lot about bullying tactics, DAVO tactics, how to cope, things to do, lots of different strategies and suggestions. And it's in our e-gazine and it's all free.
Terrific. Wonderful. Final word from me. We call ourselves bully targets. I say it's time for us to aim and fire in a new direction. And Dorothy, I thank you so much and thank you for watching.
No, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure. Thank you.